because freedom.
Freedom! Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Welcome back to a fine guest, former U.S. Attorney James Santel, joining us from the Shaw, down there by Fancy Brian. I understand Dominic also joining in the Shaw, and Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, later in the happier happy hour. But Jim, most importantly, you're joining us right now. Welcome, sir.
All the good people are here in Waukesha today. Delighted to be with you as well, Mike.
And Crudy.
Right.
I see how you guys think.
Boom, boom, right?
Jim, let's start with the newest subpoenas. The January 6th committee has issued new subpoenas to the Republicans. And there's five of them on the list. They're all sitting congresspeople. And Dom and I sort of argued about the strategic nature of this. It seems to me that the committee thinks there are four that are complicit in this action. I would call, the Mo Brooks sorts, the Perry sorts. They are perhaps complicit, Jim Jordan even perhaps, in the actual planning or carrying out of the violence, or at least the incitement of the violence for the January 6th. Crudy's interpretation. I don't hear that from Benny Thompson. But Kevin McCarthy is clearly in a different camp. The minority leader obviously has direct knowledge, had a direct conversation with Trump. We've seen at least reported what was said at that time. But Jim, what's your thought on the subpoenas? And do you draw any distinction between the subpoenas, the four, and then the other?
Right. So a couple of things right off the start. This is classic investigative movement, right? We know that there have been hundreds of people who've testified already in front of the committee, presumably behind closed doors, lots of information provided. And now as we approach June 9th, this date when presumably the committee is going to have these public hearings, we're going to have some announcements perhaps during the course of those proceedings. Now the committee is going forth and saying, you know what? These five, including Brooks and Jordan and Biggs and McCarthy, too, saying, you know what? We know an awful lot. We know what you said. We know what you did. And we would like you to come in now and perhaps fill in some of the spaces that may not be there. Maybe give us some perspective. Benny Thompson said the testimony we're looking for bears directly on President Trump's state of mind during the January 6th attack. So they know what they want, and they've got the story here. But again, in classic criminal investigative movement, this is what you do as you come to the end of your investigation, the end of your inquiry. You call in the targets, the subjects at a minimum of your investigation, and say, okay, tell us what more you want us to know before we go ahead with something further. I think there are varying levels of complicity, as you indicated. And again, the other interesting thing about this, of course, is that all of these subpoenas, not necessary as a legal matter, describe in great detail the reasons for each and every one of them. Normally, in a criminal prosecution, all you do is you issue the subpoena. We don't do that. This is done for two reasons. One is to let these folks know that indeed the committee knows what they said, knows what they did, and also, of course, that you and I and Dom and Maggie and others can talk about these things intelligently, providing a reason for their summoning them in.
Jim, strategically, I've heard it suggested by people with law degrees, not me, that perhaps this is a precursor to referral of charges to the DOJ. And perhaps the only charges suggested by that is the contempt of Congress if they refuse to act. And also, if you believe the tea leaves and the Republicans, they think they're going to win this chamber back. Well, if they refuse, I have heard the public, charges, no legitimacy to this. But if they claim there's no validity to the subpoenas, Jim, they put themselves in a trick bag when they, want to start subpoenaing sitting Democratic congresspeople someday, right?
Precedent is a difficult thing, right? Especially when you're doing it back to back. We know that somebody like the president's Senate minority leader doesn't care much for precedent. He withholds a nomination by a president 11 months before the term is over and then confirms another one within just a few weeks of the next president's term. So precedent for some people doesn't mean a whole lot, but it certainly requires that at least you think about consistency. You think about this notion that you want people to view you as somebody who has some regularity in your position. And that's exactly right. If indeed the Republicans take the House, take the Senate, and there are all sorts of investigations, it is not a distant notion for the Democrats or others who are targets of those subpoenas to say, wait a minute, back in fill in the date, May of 2022, prior to that, even after this news of this week's week breaks. You basically said subpoenas mean nothing. We're taking the same legal position. So it does have that implication, and that's the reason why it does have that possibility of establishing this precedent that the Republicans may have to eat and may have to live with if they want to pursue investigations in the second part of the Biden administration.
But, Jim, in probability, none of these sitting Republican Congress people, not McCarthy, not Brooks, not Perry, not Jordan, none of them can be compelled probably in the time frame between now and June 9th. They'll play it out in the courts. They'll delay. They'll follow the Trump-like tactics. So if you can't compel the testimony, and Chuck Todd, and I don't care much for Chuck Todd, but he said, well, apparently the January 6th Democrats have surrendered by issuing these, you know, they've thrown up their hands and said, we can't figure out any other way to get the testimony. Well, that's not a surrender, Jim. That's just one of the weapons in the toolbox, correct?
Absolutely. It's a weapon in the toolbox of any investigation. And it actually opens you up to criticism, right? If you don't go down this road, if down the road they say, well, listen, I would have appeared had only you issued a subpoena, right? So it basically removes that argument, whether it's 3 months from now, 6 months from now. I think Bolton used
that argument, right? John Bolton, right, in the prior impeachment.
Right, exactly. And so I think that argument, I agree with you that I think Chuck Todd is sort of off base when it comes to that sort of thing. All of this in the category of think about the present, but also think about the future. I don't think that Benny Thompson and the others on the committee really anticipated that at any time soon any of these five would be sitting there, certainly not in a public forum, and providing testimony under oath. But it does then rob them of that capacity to say we were never required to appear. The answer is now they were. And again, probably will run into court. You're absolutely right in terms of timing, tick-tock. We do not have a time. There is not sufficient time in any judicial proceeding to get these things enforced. And so these may be in the courts for months, if not years down the road. Department of Justice may or may not have some involvement in that if these are referred, as they should be, as they must be, under the rules to the Department of Justice for prosecution. Remember also, more broadly, the Department of Justice does not have to wait on any committee, any findings from June 9th, before, after, to do what it needs to do. None of this relates to the legitimacy, if it is pending, if it's out there, to an independent grand jury investigation being undertaken by the Department of Justice, by Merrick Garland, by Lisa Monaco, the head of the Criminal Division, others. If that's going on, this is interesting, but it doesn't stop any of that from happening.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the TGI Friday edition. I got a fine guest. He is former U.S. Attorney James Antel, our good friend. Jim, here's the interesting part. You allude to the June 9th, the beginning of the public hearings. Well, actually, they already had a public hearing.
I guess
the rejoinder of the public hearings on what happened on the January 6th. And they got lots of things planned. And my understanding is they're going to, you know, lay out a summary perhaps on day one. And my thought is, well, you don't need Kevin McCarthy. You've already got Kevin McCarthy speaking to the Republican caucus in private, but you've got it on tape. And I got to think, you know, laid out with the proper context, Jim, that would be almost more damning than anything Kevin McCarthy could be compelled to say publicly.
It certainly does seem that way, right? And if we think about the visuals on June 9th and in the days and weeks that follows that, you can well imagine the poster boards behind some members of this committee with some of those McCarthy quotes from this recently published book, basically acknowledging what we've all known all along, which is the Republicans, including Kevin McCarthy, are, again, hypocritical. They have been saying from the start privately that President Trump's behavior, his conduct, is if not criminal, certainly the basis, as we now know, for him to resign, those kinds of things. We know now that the emperor has no clothes, to use that reference. We know that McCarthy's public statements supporting the president and attacking the committee are completely inconsistent with what he said privately. Why is that significant? The private things he says presumably and almost certainly do reflect upon his actual intellectual understanding of what was going on, what he really felt at the time. I think you're absolutely right. And frankly, even having Kevin McCarthy, if he would, he will not do this, but he would decide to appear before the committee in a public setting, you know that he will not say those kinds of things aloud. We already have those kinds of admissions about his knowledge, his understanding of what the president's conduct was all about, and perhaps also the knowledge that others had, other people on those calls likewise, sort of shaking their heads, saying, what do we do? Frustration about what do we do with a president who has now gone way too far. I think that's exactly what they should frame this around on June 9th and following.
Jim, I look forward to, you know, a summer full of testimony broadcast right here on Devil Radio and the Shaw. You're listening right now, folks. He's James Santel, former U.S. attorney. Jim, sort of to digress for just a minute, new book out from Mark Esper. Mm-hmm. Mark Esper, former Pentagon chief for Trump. And my understanding is Trump at least once, maybe multiple times, suggested that we should fire missiles and take out the cartel in Mexico. Now, Jim, you know, his son thinks that that's a swell idea, but it seems like an act of war. Even if your intentions were good, and Trump's intentions were not good because he said, well, you know, we'll fire the missiles and no one will know it was us. Because, of course, there's something wrong with firing the missiles into a friendly neighboring country.
An ally of ours, right? Right, exactly.
The whole thought, Jim, obviously it didn't happen. But your thoughts on blowing up the cartel in Mexico with U.S. missiles?
Outrage and shock, but again, consistently never surprised, right? We put this in the long list of things that the president has said publicly and privately that are outrageous, but are not surprising. They're consistent with this complete lack of understanding about how the government works internally, who does what, who's got responsibility, a complete misunderstanding about what in the Constitution his authorities are, what those of the Congress are to declare war, the circumstances under which anyone would do this kind of a thing. And one wonders out loud if he really understands at all anything about government. Probably very little. You know, Mark Esper's his comments here, his revelations, again, confirm what we have already known. It would have been nice, as many people have said, if Mark Esper, during the course of his own term in office, including his statements about the president suggesting that people be fired on Lafayette Square for when he was walking over there, holding up the Bible in front of the church there, all those kinds of things. At some point, you do say that I've got a greater responsibility to America. I can't continue to support this. Maybe you're pushing back on this. Maybe you're keeping the bad things from happening. But at some point, you need to come forth and say, you know what? I am resigning out of protest about what's going on right now in my department and the impact that this president is having on the government of the United States of America.
Jim, that red line, that line in the sand, for you personally, would it come before or after the former president started questioning whether or not the Chinese were using the hurricane machines against us?
Right. But once again, all of these.
See, I ask with a straight face, Jim, and you feel like you've got to answer these questions.
Oh, right, exactly. It makes you wonder. I suppose in Esper's defense, one could say that there is so much of it. Every time you sit down with the president of the United States of America, it's one more outrageous thing after the next. And you have to decide which ones are so completely ridiculous, like those kinds of things, and which ones might have a sufficient amount of traumatic and dramatic impact upon our nation, our world, to say, you know what, I've got to go public to stop this from happening. We thank Mark Esper for his service. The line's got to be somewhere between those two things. And one wonders, one would hope that he would at least give the profits from his book to some sort of a civics group, some sort of an education government group, right?
That's not going to happen, Jim.
It will not. But
that's as likely as Trump being charitable, Jim. Right.
Absolutely. One would hope that that would maybe justify a little bit of his late entry into the scene here in telling us all these things that do not surprise but continue to shock us.
Come back with us. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of the devil. Although I would point out, Jim, we've used that term loosely through the years, but we mean it in your case, sir. More devil's advocates, more James Santel. You on the phones perhaps as well. Take you up to the happier happy hour and Dom and Maggie Dawn. It's going to be a big show. It's stuffed full of cannolis and James Santel and goodness.
When people try to sell books, they do all sorts of interesting exotic things.
Oh, I see nothing. I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.